documented investigation of a woman's abduction aboard a UFO. Such things that the dreams are made of, and that's probably the problem then. When someone looks at this, they go, okay, it's a novel, but it really isn't.
No, it isn't. I must admit, when I first heard about the case, I had misgivings about even getting involved with it.
Let's set up the background first. Raymond Fowler, your involvement with the world of UFOs.
Yes, I'm presently serving as director of investigations for an international group called UFRON, the Mutual UFO Network, which hails from Seguin, Texas, right in our own backyards.
Uh-huh. You don't sound like from Seguin, though.
No, I'm from New England, one in Massachusetts. Uh-huh. I've been involved in UFO research for a number of years. My interest goes back to 1947. I served as an early warning coordinator for the United States Air Force-sponsored University of Colorado project in 1966-67 time frame. So I've been with it a long time, and this particular case is very bizarre as compared to some of the other types of work I've done in the UFO field.
What initially sparked your interest in the UFO field anyway? And did you go into this as a, I don't know, a point of curiosity, an adversary position? Were you out hoping they were there or proving that they really weren't?
Well, I must admit, I was probably only about 15 years old when Kenneth Arnold sighted these flying objects over Mount Rainier, Washington in 1947, June 24th, 1947, and I began collecting news clips thinking that they were experimental aircraft because I was interested in that kid interest stuff. But when I joined the United States Air Force and become involved with the National Security Agency, I came across people in reports that indicated that the United States Air Force was considering UFOs to be very serious business. So I took it upon myself when I was discharged from the United States Air Force to join the National Investigations Committee on Aerial Phenomena as an associate member just to keep abreast of what was going on in the world of UFOs. But my interest got to the point where I began to conduct investigations myself and sending unsolicited reports to the Air Force and NICAP, and before you know it, I got involved on a job training program with NICAP as an investigator, and things sort of snowballed, and now they say I'm a UFO expert. That was many years ago.
Let's come up to date now then, and this case. How did you first get involved in this?
I reside in the state of Massachusetts, and the Massachusetts group got involved with the case through Dr. Jalen Hynek Center for UFO Study. My first impulse was not to get involved. It was very, very bizarre. However, the Massachusetts state director indicated to me that the woman seemed to be all there, mm-hmm. and that it was a very interesting case. So I became a member of a five-man team. It consisted of an aerospace engineer, a solar physicist, a communications specialist, an electrical engineer, myself. We conducted a very rigid character reference check on the family. Two extensive lie detector tests were given to two of the primary witnesses. The abductee was given a psychiatric examination, not only to assure us that she was not a psychotic, but to assure her, because much of this came out under hypnosis, and she couldn't believe that such a thing could have happened to her and thought that she was actually losing her mind and wanted to be reassured and to seek medical attention that this was something wrong with her. But I came to the conclusion that from these various tests that these people were telling the truth as they knew it to be, and they were honest. And what intrigues me is that we have about 200 cases like this on record, and there are subtle similarities which exist in these cases, which come from all over the world, which make me feel that the close encounter of the third kind, type G, as we call it, are real bona fide experiences. The apparent stimulus seems to be extraterrestrial. Might be much more complex than that. However, all we can do at the present time is to document cases like this and just wonder what it's all about.
The situation of hypnosis, let's kind of go into the incident then with the woman, because was hypnosis used because she either was leery of what she consciously thought happened, or she couldn't recall everything that happened, or was this just an investigative tool on your part?
This is an investigative tool. You'll find that most close encounters of the third kind, type G, UFO experience, seeing a UFO and its occupants at very close range, but having a missing time, as it were, a time period which they can't account for afterwards. In the case of the Andreessen affair, let's go back to the date that it happened. January 25th, 1967, about 6:35 p.m., Betty and her seven children and two parents were visiting to help her care for the children because her husband was in the hospital, were at their home in South Ashburn in Massachusetts. The children and her parents were in the living room. The lights in the house went out momentarily. A bright orange flash came through the kitchen window, which overlooked a field, and began pulsating. And the children became very frightened. She shooed them into the living room. The father came running out, looked out the window, the back window, to see where the light was coming from. And he described, in his own way, some small childlike beings that looked like kids dressed up in strange costumes coming toward the house. All he remembers after that is somehow they got in the house. The rest of the family went into, for want of a better description, suspended animation, which really shook up Betty. She wanted to be assured that her family was all right, and they let the younger daughter, who was 11 years old at the time, out of this state, as it were. And she lived under hypnosis, a very complimentary experience, as it were, from her standpoint, talking, using the vocabulary and the description of 11-year-olds.
Okay, now you say they let, you mean what did she, I mean, appeal to the beings? I'm worried about my
yes,
family.
Yes.
And they said, okay, well, let somebody
they established, she heard voices in her head, the mouth didn't move. We'll probably be seeing some of the visuals later on, but she described them as 3 to 4 foot high with a large pear-shaped head, wraparound eyes, small nose, mouth, and the mouth was almost like scar tissue. Just to go very briefly through what happened, it's a very complex and detailed thing indeed.
But up to this point, though, you have this got one other family member corroborating.
There are three. Right? There are three now. But that's about all that could be remembered. Mm-hmm. And it seemed like a bad dream to Becky. They couldn't believe something like this happened. They discussed it over the years, and when Dr. J. Allen Hynek, through, I think, Associated Press article, indicated that he would like to hear from people who have had UFO experiences, they weren't even sure this was a UFO experience at the time.
They sort of keep this to themselves for a while.
Yes, they kept it to themselves for a long time. But getting back to the experience, what happened was they convinced her, through mind control, to follow them. She was brought out to the backyard, taken aboard a small 20-25 foot in diameter craft, taken apparently to a larger craft and subjected to a number of physical, what seemed to be physical examinations, and then was put in a container filled with liquid. And she was, tubes came into her mouth and her nose, allowing her to breathe. And while she was in this glass chair filled with liquid, they apparently took her someplace.
Okay, now that is this picture here, right?
That's right. That would be a good time to take a look at that.
A picture of this from someone. And we can see what Raymond's talking about.
Bear in mind, we're dealing with a woman that has only 10 years of formal education and married the boy next door and had seven children, one after the other. She really didn't know what UFOs were all about.
Now, these are her drawings.
Those are her drawings. Mm-hmm. She's an amateur artist, and she has a remarkable talent to remember things in detail. Mm-hmm. Of course, under hypnosis, she relived this experience, which we were just describing. Now, when they took her out of that particular chair, they floated her down a black track, which ran between the chairs, if you'd like to show that. There are 8 chairs there, 4 on each side, and she was subjected to several of these chairs, and then she was floated down the middle of these chairs, down a black track, and a door just appeared. And this is the typical thing that was happening in there, and they went down a very, very dark tunnel, which seemed to be hewn out of solid rock, and emerged on the other side into a very, very large place where she underwent some very strange experiences and was brought back and went through the various things that she had gone through before she had entered this alien realm, as it were, and was returned to the house. When she returned to the house, the two aliens, whatever we might call them, brought 2 glowing balls with them. And when they entered the kitchen area, one of them went up to the father, who was still at the window and motionless, really, and they held the ball in front of him, and he shuffled by her. Under hypnosis, she's screaming for her father, and the father just ignores her, walks right back, shuffles right by her into the living room. And every member of the family was taken to bed in this sort of state, unaware of her yelling at them and so forth. And then she was put to bed, and that was the next morning. It's very typical of other cases we have on file.
What was the time period involved here?
We feel it took place between 6:35 and perhaps 11 o'clock in the evening. Mm-hmm. The younger daughter under hypnosis noticed the clock was read 6:35. And Betty, when she was returned to the house, noticed the clock reading 10:40. It's interesting, you can go back to January 25th, 1967, as they're reliving this, and you can ask questions like how the weather was, how much snow was there on the ground, what was the temperature, what was on TV, the power blackout, and things like that. And we went back and checked local weather records, power company records, and many of the things, in fact, all of the things they described that happened on that day could be checked. A lot of these things was indicated at least through hypnosis. They were reliving that particular day.
Yeah. Let's take our this break, get it out of the way. We'll be back in 2 minutes. The engineer that was taking the thoughts from the lady and trying to put them together and what that craft might really look like. Could you hit on that again?
Yeah. One of the investigating team is an aerospace engineer. It's a manager at the Raytheon company. He holds a very good position there, a very skilled individual. And he was playing the devil's advocate, as we all were, trying to find something in this story that would indicate that it really didn't happen. We were being very objective about this. And he asked her to describe each compartment, each room that she entered, the way she entered, and the general size of the room, the shape, and so forth. And he came out with, like, a lot of pieces of a picture puzzle and was able to put them together into a very logical, coherent, circular craft, just as she had described it. One of his sketches are in the book. There were a number of sketches he was able to do. Speaking of sketches, one of the unique things about the book, The Andreasen Affair, is that she is an amateur artist, but a very excellent amateur artist, and she was given a post-hypnotic suggestion to remember in detail the various things that she saw. And she has given us, in the book, in the report, which is about 528 pages long, three volumes, a series of drawings giving a sort of a chronicle survey, as it were, of her trip through the craft. They're very, very detailed. One wonders how someone with a 10th grade education could ever concoct something like that on her own. They were just too detailed.
Well, let's look at this. It's the last picture, really, that we have of one of the little people. One thing about this, I wondered if Steven Spielberg got a copy of this or something, because obviously we're using the term Close Encounters of the Third Kind, and the little fellow here, or do we know what they were? Were they it?
Well,
it was a male-female situation, but it looks like, it's so much like the characters of Close Encounters in the film.
It definitely would be. Dr. J. Allen Hynek was technical director for the film, and much of the material that went into the film was drawn from cases like the Andreasen Affair. And they came up with a composite of what people have described as aliens. The term Close Encounter of the Third Kind, for example, was coined by Hynek many years ago and was used in the film.
In your areas of research, other people that have had somewhat similar experiences, is there any thread of similarity, though, as far as description of beings that they've seen, description of spacecraft?
Yes, in fact, United States Air Force Academy text that was being used at the Air Force Academy back in 1968 indicates the most commonly reported alien is just about what Mrs. Andreasen described. 3 to 4 foot high, large head, wraparound eyes, slit for mouth, the telepathic communication. We had a case involving an Air Force Master Sergeant getting away from the housewife type of sighting that belongs to the Air Force's Human Reliability Program. And this group consists of a very select group of people in the United States Air Force that have passed psychiatric exams and so forth. So the cream of the crop of the Air Force. And he went outside of Holloman Air Force Base to watch a meteor shower on his way home from a night shift. And he had an experience very similar to Betty Andreasen's experience. Same type of occupants, the fact that they didn't walk, they floated. And an abduction experience being put on a similar examination table given in physical examination. There are a number of people from various walks of life. There are about 200 reports that we have on file at the Center for UFO Studies that involve close encounters of the third kind type G, where people report onboard experiences. And many of the similarities which exist between these reports are very subtle, in some cases never been published before. And this sort of serves as a check from our point of view on the apparent, I say apparent because we don't have proof, validity, that these cases have a common stimulus, which seems, on the surface, to be extraterrestrial, but you can't prove that. It might be more complex than that. And the best we can do is to take the tools of science, which we do have, with lack of physical evidence in the case of the Andreasen Affair, and apply them just like a criminologist would do in dealing with a criminal. Again, the background checks, the lie detector tests, the hypnotic regression, the psychiatric exam, and as many tools as we can apply to cases like this, which at least have convinced us that the experience is real, and that the people believe that the experience is real, that they've actually experienced this, and that they seem to be honest, industrious, very credible people who describe something totally incredible and outside of rational world.
Right, by virtue of doing investigations that put you, in an adversary position going in and then trying to maintain your objectivity. But now, personally, we believe, obviously you believe that she believes this happened.
That's right.
But do you believe it really happened?
I can't prove it, but I just have a very, very, very strong feeling based upon the evidence, not the proof, but the evidence that has been accumulated from, as I say, about 200 cases involving people from various walks of life, from other countries, describe something very, very similar to what the Andreessen family experienced. It's very hard for me not to take such cases into account. Then you have a host of other type of UFO sightings. For example, you have the case where someone sees a UFO similar to what Mrs. Andreessen saw, which leaves physical indentations behind in the ground, which penetrometers indicate maybe you had a ton or two from that object sitting in the ground, or traces, electromagnetic effects. No hypnosis needed. These people see this object. There are effects left behind. An experience like the Andreessen affair is just a step further. She not only saw the craft, the occupants, but she was brought aboard. And there's a similarity, a similar thread that runs through all kinds of UFO reports other than the Close Encounters of the Third Kind.
Let me take a step further and get the last break out of the way, fortunately, and then we'll be back. Do you personally believe they're there?
I believe after competent investigation that although 80% can be explained away in terms of natural phenomena or man-made objects and a few hoaxes, relatively speaking, that there exists a residue of about 20% which remain unexplained after investigation.
Yeah, that's a problem because by the nature of the beast, a UFO is really it documented that a lot of people saw it, but it's not really documented that yet it is because here's a big piece of it.
Mm-hmm. There are cases on file, for example, that we have that involve Close Encounters of the Second Kind, which do involve physical traces. Mm-hmm. Physical traces which in no way could have been made by the witnesses involved. As I say, you can take an instrument like a penetrometer and we find that whatever sat there weighed several tons, and whatever made the baked area in the ground, you would have to had some kind of a microwave generator to do something like this.
Logically, there's got to be life somewhere else, but wouldn't it be so much easier all of us if one of these would kind of, I don't know, walk up in the middle of the Astrodome and go, "Hi there, well, we've decided to talk to everybody."
Well, putting it in reverse, I think that NASA, and looking at a report I'd seen that NASA had written a long time ago, that it would be a very, very long process that they would go through. They would discover life.
Yeah.
And it would be a very long conditioning process before they would actually really become part of the experience on an overt scale.
That's logical, too, if you see what our lifestyle is like, right? Time has gotten away from us. Remember it. It should be somewhere near you, the Andreessen affair. Have a good day. Join us tomorrow. Raymond, thank you for your time.
Thank you very much for having us.